Welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. I'm Rachel Isaacs, a student from Manalapa, New Jersey, and the engineer for this program. We look forward to learning some Torah with you today. Thank you for tuning in. Today we are joined by Rabbi Meir Schweiger, a faculty member in the Mashkiach Ruchani at Pardes. He will be teaching us about Parshat Yitro. A few quick announcements, and then we'll hand it over to Rabbi Schweiger. Do you have a vision for the Jewish future? Have you considered a career in Jewish education? The Pardes Educators Program includes 2 years of subsidized study and living in Jerusalem, leading to an MA degree in Jewish education. Graduates teach Judaic studies in day schools in North America. For more information, see the Pardes website, www.pardes.org.il. Your participation and feedback is vital for the success of the podcast series. Please send us comments on the episode, where you live, and how you heard about us. Send your email to podcast@pardesusa.org. Thank you. That's it, and now Rabbi Schweiger.
Thank you, Rachel. This week's parsha is Parshat Yitro, and I would like to focus on the personality of Yitro. The first time that we see Yitro is when Moshe runs away from Pharaoh, a fugitive. Pharaoh is attempting to kill him. And Moshe meets Yitro's daughters by the well. Yitro's daughters are being harassed. Moshe saves his daughters. And at the end of chapter 2 in Shemot, when the daughters come back, their father's response is, "Where is that man who saved you? Why did you just leave him? Why don't you call him and let him come and eat with bread with us?" The first picture that we see of Yitro is of somebody who is a very, very caring individual. Somebody who has a profound understanding of what it is to be grateful and to express that gratitude by inviting the person in to reciprocate, offer them hospitality. Subsequently, in chapter 2, we find that not only does Yitro extend this hospitality to Moshe, but he invites Moshe to come and remain with him. And ultimately, we're told in chapter 2, sentence 21, that Yitro gives his daughter Tzipora to Moshe to be his wife. I would like to take the opportunity to perhaps contrast this story with a parallel story, the story of Jacob. Jacob is running away from his brother who wants to kill him, the same way that Moshe is running away from Pharaoh who wants to kill him, except that Jacob is running away to his family, to his mother's brother, Laban. And it's very interesting that when Jacob comes to the well, so Jacob takes the stone off the well, and when Jacob sees Rachel, he immediately helps her to water her sheep. Rachel goes and tells her father goes and welcomes Jacob in. But the question is, to what degree is Laban somebody who really is grateful and hospitable, or to what degree is that really a facade? And in fact, when we compare the two stories, we see that when Laban says to Jacob, "It's not right that you should come and work for me for nothing. What are your wages?" So Jacob proposes, "Well, I'll work for you for 7 years for Rachel, your daughter, your younger daughter." The contrast is very, very striking. Moshe didn't have to work for Tzipora. Yitro is very glad to offer up, to offer his daughter to Moshe in marriage. Laban is not at all forthcoming, and in fact, we know the story that in the end, he deceives Jacob. And in fact, one of the things which I will speak about in more detail as we go along is the different relationship of Moshe and Yitro, which is this model relationship of a son-in-law, father-in-law, a relationship of mutual respect, a relationship which is a meeting of the minds, and the relationship of Yaakov and Lavan, where there is this constant enmity, confrontation between father-in-law and son-in-law, to the point where the father-in-law wants to control his son-in-law. And in fact, just to, as long as we began this parallel, the next time that we see Yitro is when, after Moshe encounters God at the burning bush, Moshe comes to Yitro and asks his permission to leave. And we find in chapter 4, sentence 18, when he asks his permission, he says, "My brethren are in Egypt. I would like to return to them to see if they're still alive." And Yitro, without batting an eyelash, says to Moshe, "Go in peace." When Jacob comes to his father-in-law and says that he would like to go back to his family, Lavan is very reluctant to do so. Lavan says, "Look, you've been a source of blessing to my house." And in the end, the only way that Jacob is able to leave is eventually when he runs away from Lavan. Two stories, so similar and so radically different. And that's because Yitro, in many ways, is a polar opposite of Lavan. I would like to now look at a number of other parallels. On the first Rashi in our parsha, it says, "Vayishma Yitro Choten Moshe," when Yitro, the father-in-law of Moshe, heard, "Et kol asher asa Hashem liYisrael," or "I kol asher asa Elokim leMoshe uliYisrael amo," all that God had done for Moses and Israel, his people, Rashi comments, what is it that Yitro heard? And the answer is, Yitro heard about the splitting of the Red Sea and the battle of Amalek. The splitting of the Red Sea fits in very well with the verse because it speaks about God taking the Jews out of Egypt, but we could say that the splitting of the Red Sea is just the extension of that. Why should Rashi mention the Battle of Amalek? The most obvious reason is because this is what immediately precedes our parsha. It would seem to be, though, that there's a much deeper meaning to this. And this is actually reflected in a commentary known as Kesudo, a modern-day commentary, who says that the Torah is trying to contrast Yitro with Amalek by juxtaposing them. And the contrast has to do with two non-Jewish responses to the Exodus. Over the past few weeks, I have tried to develop the theme, which is a central theme of the plagues and eventually of the events that happen in the desert, where God says again and again, "I am doing these things in order that you should know, ki ani Hashem, that I am God." When Amalek in last week's parsha goes and attacks the Jews, the question is raised, why? Why should Amalek attack the Jews? The Jews have not actually, are not a threat to them. They're not coming to take away their territory. They're not even coming into their territory. So why attack the Jews? And there are a number of commentaries who say that Amalek attacks the Jews because this is an ideological battle. There's a verse at the end of chapter 25 in Dvarim. When it recalls the story of Amalek, it says, "Remember what Amalek did to you." And the expression in the pasuk is "Asher karcha baderech." The word karcha is not clear. Rashi offers two explanations. One explanation is asher kacha. It's related to the Hebrew word kar, cold. Amalek cooled you off. Meaning, when the Jews left Egypt, everyone was intimidated by what happened. Nobody would imagine going to war against the Jews after the news got out about all of the plagues in Egypt. Amalek comes and attacks the Jews, and what they do is they now create a precedent, which cools them off, which now makes it possible for other people to go ahead and attack them. There's another explanation, though, of this expression, asher karcha, karcha related to the word mikre, chance event. And a number of commentaries say, when Amalek attacks the Jews, it's an ideological battle. Amalek is attacking them to deny everything which the Exodus was supposed to express. If God's goal was to bring the world and the Jewish people to this recognition that you know that I am God, Amalek attacks the Jews and makes a statement, there is no God. Everything that happens in the world is chance, is luck. One of the descendants of Amalek, Haman, cast lots. And on that basis, we have a holiday which is known as Purim, recalling those lots. And it's because Haman was doing the same thing. Haman was expressing the ideology that there is no God, and perhaps as an extension of that, there's no such thing as meaning in life. Everything which happens is chance. And for this reason, God is so upset with Amalek and says there's an eternal battle against Amalek. Yitro is the antithesis of Amalek. If Amalek denies the existence of God, if Amalek wants to declare everything which happens in this world is just chance, is luck, Yitro now comes out and wants to say there's another voice among the non-Jewish world. And there are people who recognize that yes, there is a God, and in fact see very clearly the hand of God in everything which happened in Egypt. There's a very interesting analogy in terms of this juxtaposition of Yitro with Amalek to a story which appears in chapter 14 in Bereshit. And this is the battle of the four kings and the five kings. And without going into all the details, at a certain point, Abraham goes and wages war against these four kings who are pretty much superpowers of the day. And the motivation to do so is to save his nephew Lot. And Abraham achieves an unbelievable victory. The only way that such a victory could have come about is through a miracle, through the hand of God. And in fact, in chapter 14, in Bereshit, in sentence 18 and 19, we're told that when Abraham comes back from this battle, he's greeted by a king whose name is Malki Tzedek, the king of Shalem, who brings out bread and wine, who is the priest to the high God. And he blesses Abraham in sentence 19 and 20 and says, blessed is Abraham to the high God who possesses heaven and earth. And blessed is the high God who has given his enemies, or your enemies, into your hand. Malki Tzedek is someone who recognizes that there is an El Elyon, a high God who possesses heaven and earth by virtue of perhaps having created it, a high God who has intervened in this battle to enable Abraham to be victorious over his enemies. And this king, Malki Tzedek, is contrasted with another king who appears in sentence 21, the king of Sodom. The king of stone says to Abraham, give me the souls and you take the possessions. The king of stone has no recognition of God, certainly not of a high God, but has also no recognition of gratitude. The first word that comes out of his mouth is, give me. Malki Tzedek and Yitro are very similar personalities. Amalek and Stone are very similar. God ultimately destroys, thoroughly destroys, the area of Stone. God declares an eternal battle against Amalek. Two stories, two responses by significant non-Jewish personalities, two radically different responses. Let us go back to Yitro and look a little bit further at who he is. We're told in the story that Yitro takes Moses' wife, Tzipporah, and his sons after they were sent away, and he now brings them to Moses. The Yitro who basically told Moses, you can go see your brethren, is also the Yitro who takes back his wife, who takes back his daughter, who's been separated from Moses, but who now would like to bring about this reunification of the family. For Yitro, it's very important that his daughter should go back to Moses. And it's because Yitro recognizes who Moses is. In fact, throughout our section in chapter 18 in Shemot, Yitro is constantly referred to as the father-in-law of Moshe. And it begs the question, we know already from chapter 2 that he's Moses' father-in-law. Why tell me that again and again? But this is the badge that Yitro wears. He's proud to be the father-in-law of Moshe. And he wants his daughter and his grandchildren to be brought back to their husband and father. Not only that. If we see the events in our parasha as happening in chronological sequence, Yitro may very well know that the Jews have now come into the desert in order to receive the Torah and enter into a covenantal relationship with God. And he wants his daughter and his grandchildren to be there so that they should become part of the covenant. In sentence 5, it says, and Yitro, the father-in-law of Moshe, together with the sons and the wife, come to Moshe, to the desert where he is encamped by the mountain of God. And Rashi raises an interesting question. Why do you have to tell me Yitro is coming to the desert? We know where the Jewish people are. One could even ask the question, why mention this whole verse? The whole verse is superfluous. And the answer which Rashi gives, which is a very telling answer, is, this is coming to teach you the praise of Yitro. Yitro, who was living in what we would call the creature comforts of the world, who's living in Midian, who we could imagine has a beautiful home, who has, in fact, all the things that he needs for his comfort, is now willing to leave all that and go to a desert, which is barren, which is stark, which has nothing. And what's pulling him there? Because that's where the mountain of God is. Because Yitro is somebody who is seeking spirituality. And for that, he's prepared to give up all of his material comforts. If earlier I said that Yitro is being brought in at this point as a counter to Amalek, as another voice of how non-Jews responded to the Exodus and to the splitting of the Red Sea, Yitro is now being presented as perhaps a role model for the Jews themselves. In last week's parsha, as the Jews are traveling through the desert, we find story after story where the Jews are complaining. One time it's because they have no water. Another time it's because they're lacking food. They remember the flesh pots of Egypt. And on a certain level, it's astounding to us. Here are the Jews who have the pillar of the cloud, the pillar of fire, who saw the splitting of the Red Sea, who saw the 10 plagues in Egypt. How can they be so preoccupied with these material things? And perhaps this is what Yitro is now bringing to the Jewish people. Perspective. Yes, there are no material benefits in the desert. And it is a stark place. And the conditions are very, very Spartan. But there's the mountain of God. And maybe the priority should be somebody who's seeking spirituality. And perhaps this is an important message to the Jewish people before they receive the Torah, before they have the revelation at Sinai. Appreciate the magnitude of what it is to be able to have that relationship with God. And look at this person, Yitro, who is prepared to give up everything in order to seek that out. Let's look a little bit further. In sentence 8, it says, and Moshe tells Yitro, his father, it says, Moshe tells his father-in-law, all that God had done to Pharaoh and to Egypt, and all of the travails which the people had experienced on the way, and how God had saved them. And in sentence 9, we're told, Vayichad Yitro al kol ha-tova. The word Vayichad is also a very unusual word. And Rashi presents two explanations. One explanation is that the word Vayichad is related to the Hebrew word chedva, which means joy. And then the explanation would be, and Yitro rejoiced at all the good which God had done to Israel. And in fact, what this is saying is that Yitro is able to empathize with the Jewish people, to be able to experience their joy, which is very remarkable. But then Rashi goes on to give a second explanation. What is Vayichad? Na'aseh b'saro chidudin chidudin. His skin became filled with goosebumps. And why? When he heard of how the Jews were saved, but how this happened at the expense of the Egyptians and Pharaoh who drowned, he all of a sudden developed goosebumps. Goosebumps as a sign of experiencing the pain of the Egyptians. And if I take these two explanations together, Yitro then becomes a fascinating individual. On the one hand, here is Yitro, who embraces the Jewish people, who embraces God, who is able to be happy and rejoice together with the Jewish people at their unbelievable good fortune at being saved. And yet the same Yitro is not somebody who rejects his past, where he comes from. Yitro is somebody who is a non-Jew, who lives in the non-Jewish world, who also identifies with that world. And I would like to insert right now, it's very interesting that at the end of this story, we find that in chapter 18, sentence 27, it says, Vayishalach Moshe et chotno, Moshe sends away his father-in-law, Vayelech lo el arzo, he goes back to his land. If I take the text at its face value, Yitro, in fact, does not convert to Judaism. Yitro remains a non-Jew. Yitro is unusual in that he lives in both worlds. He is able to embrace the Jewish people, embrace their God, to acknowledge their God, And in fact, as we see subsequently, it says that Yitro says to Moshe, I now see, sentence 11, that Hashem is greater than all the gods. Similar to what Malki Tzedek said when he refers to God as being El Elyon. So that Yitro takes it one step further. He sees Hashem, exactly what God wanted, Leman Teidu Ki Ani Hashem, the four-letter name of God, the God who is the unique God of the Jewish people, the God who is beyond everything that we understand. Although Yitro has that acknowledgement, he still remains a non-Jew. And I'd even take it one step further, that Yitro actually sees that perhaps his mission in life is to bring the non-Jewish world to that recognition of Hashem. If Amalek is trying to fight that, his job is to try to promote that. The same Yitro who wants his daughter and his grandchildren to be reunited with Moshe, to become integrated into the Jewish people, and become full-fledged Jews, at the same time sees that his place is somehow to be this model for the non-Jewish world. Yitro is somebody who's able to live in both worlds, who's able to appreciate both worlds, to relate to both worlds, who can be the bridge between both worlds. Not only is Yitro somebody who has something to teach the non-Jewish world, but he also has something to teach the Jewish world. Someone who, although he's not going to become a Jew, is a seeker who will go out to a desert to find God. Someone who's able to empathize with the Jews, to experience their joy, even though he himself is not a Jew. Somebody who's able to come in and give advice to Moshe of how to create an organizational structure of judges and to use his words so that you will not be worn out and the people will not be worn out. Somebody who is a deep thinker, but who is an extremely organized and structured individual who can also be very, very much down to earth and grounded. It is no coincidence that Yitro and Moshe are this match. And as much as Yitro prides himself to be the father-in-law of Moshe, it is clear from the text that Moshe prides himself on having such a father-in-law. As I mentioned earlier, the relationship between Moshe and Yitro is sharply in contrast with the relationship between Yaakov and Lavan. One could even make the case Yitro and Moshe become the tikkun, the corrective, for Yaakov and Lavan. We need more people in this world like Yitro. People who are able to live in a number of different frameworks, who are able to be the interface between different frameworks. People in the end who do not have to reject when they embrace, but can in fact embrace all worlds. People who can be very much rooted in relationships with people, but at the same time be able to seek relationship with God. Hopefully, the Yitros of the world will eventually triumph over the Amalekim in the world, so that in the end we create a world which actually does come to this acknowledgement of God, but also an acknowledgement of people and a concern for people that Yitro so clearly demonstrates. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Please tell your friends about this podcast series, and please let us know your thoughts and comments. Send us email via podcast@pardesusa.org. Thanks to Dr. David Bernstein, who is the executive producer of the Pardes from Jerusalem podcast series. Shalom and goodbye from Jerusalem.